lad. Saturday pictures when I was a lad. Those were the greatest days of all.
Ladhood by Liam Williams. Episode 3, The Truants.
I was beginning to fear I'd cried myself dry when I finally heard the key in the door downstairs. They'd read the letter, and then nothing would be the same again. I held the Orwell tight to my chest. Yesterday morning now seemed... well, it seemed like 32 hours ago. But it had been a long 32 hours.
Morning, Liam. Feeling any better?
No, not really.
Oh.
Just feel like I've been getting steadily iller for a couple of days.
Oh, wonder what it is.
I don't think it's anything serious. I mean, it feels serious right now, but it feels like it won't be serious tomorrow.
Oh, all these feelings are worrying me. I think you better stay off school today.
No, I think I should go into school.
Oh, okay.
I suddenly feel a bit worse.
Oh, I better call the doctor.
Honestly, I don't need doctor.
This dance of complaint and concern continued until Mum was as late for work as she could afford to be, at which point she, unknowingly, left me lying there, happy and inordinately healthy, awaiting the arrival of Cranny, Craig, Bradley and Ralph, my core friendship group. I was curating a mass truancy at my house. A foolhardy plan hatched against a background of academic anxiety and tough crackdowns on healthy adolescent recalcitrants. Nobody wanted to be in trouble. But for those hardened souls who had been in trouble their whole lives and were inured to it, there were grillings, bollockings, and if you had really transgressed, proper bollockings. We felt our freedoms threatened at every turn. We were bigger now, and just as smart as the teachers. Nay, smarter. Their authority, therefore, seemed less absolute, less directly consequential of their superior size and maturity of aspect. But now we saw them for what they were. Oppressors. A ruling class of salaried sadists, enforcing an ideology of deference. They had gone too far, and we weren't gonna take it anymore. And also, we just quite wanted a day off school. Hatching a plan surely wouldn't be easy. Ralph made the first proposal.
Leah's parents are both at work all day, so his house is best. Rest of us meet at school at 8:30 under a bridge. Then we take us ties off, put on our jumpers so no one knows we're supposed to be at school, and we walk to Liam's.
And everybody just immediately assented, so it was quite easy in the end. Despite, or perhaps because of, the plan's Panglossian simplicity, I felt a rather heavy trepidation that morning as I waited for them to arrive. It was one of those moments where the near literality of metaphor becomes apparent. My heart, so it felt, was actually in my mouth, or at least lodged uneasily in my gullet. There was a void where it should have been, and in that void, I felt the soft and manic flutterings of butterflies. The hall clock showed 9:04. The kitchen clock 1:02. I never knew which to trust. Had they bottled it? Had they been caught? Had they all been crushed to death by a big van? So I just waited. The sun climbed the sky. The hall clock gave thankless chase to the kitchen one. The house was all ticks and the low hum of appliances. And then...
Yes, lad, how we doing? We're
yes,
good.
Yes, Liam.
All right, Liam, let us in, boy.
Bradley, come on. What took you so long?
We bought weed and scran.
Bliss was it, in that dawn, to be alive. But to be young was very heaven. They wanted to show me the scran, which means food, by the way.
We got pizza, we got chicken curry.
Cheese pasty.
We got a Rustler's burger, and something a little bit healthier, we got a Rustler's chicken burger.
Nutrition wasn't really a thing in those days.
We got cheese strings, we got Doritos, we got potato smileys. Have you got any ketchup?
Of course we had ketchup, because we were neither very rich nor very poor. We smoked some of the weed. We sat under the pergola, round the wooden garden table, nicely painted by my dad. I don't remember what we talked about, but it was funny, boy. The cannabinoids blasted our spirits and emboldened our glee. Any guilt, fear or regret was now extinguished, and we felt at home and free, here in the promised land of spliffs and sunshine, gardens, cheap freezer foods, and crucially, space and time to think and be without some hateful old power fetishist barking and snarling at you and trying to retard your nascent human spirit. It probably didn't help that I was stoned when the phone rang, though.
Shit, that's the phone.
Well, obviously it ain't the kettle, is it?
Shut up, you pricks. It could be my mum. It could be at school. Hello?
Took you a long time to answer. You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. Well, not fine. Still ill, but my hands feel better, so...
Sounds a bit strange.
No, I'm not strange. I've just been asleep for a bit, so I might still be in a dream.
What's that noise?
Oh, it's just telly.
It sounds very real. What is it?
Well, documentary about, you know, lads my age having fun, laughing and that.
What's it called?
Laughter Boys. I gotta go, Mum. Bye.
That felt like the threshold of safety passed, and we relaxed into the late morning. Then, with the scran munched, the washing up done, and all the garish packaging deposited in a bin some 300 yards down the road, we settled into the afternoon. For a while, honestly, we sat and revised or did our coursework. I remember Cranny with his big A3 sheets for CDT all laid out, Craig getting engrossed in some essay or other he was scribbling in a yellow exercise book. These were good lads, see? Not wastrels. We had the TV on, of course. At around 2:30 p.m, the time school finished, which now seems impossibly early to me, as in breakfast time on a particularly torpid day early, our little escapade came to a close. The smiles and hugs these good lads shared as they retied their school ties sealed our achievement. We'd done it. For once in our meagre and sorry lives, we had beaten our oppressors, outfoxed them, lived, if only for a day, as we deserved to live, as free men. However, the others hadn't had the gall or the good sense to feign semi-serious illness, so now became a little furrowed of brow as they bade me goodbye, presumably beginning to mentally draft forged sick notes. For me, the remaining challenges were twofold. Firstly, to remove any evidence of truant harbouring from the house, bad food packaging, spliff ends, odd sofa bulges, and then, secondly, when at last my parents were home and safely oblivious to the house's most recent memories, to feign convalescing at about the same rate I'd feigned ailing.
How are you feeling, love?
I'd say about a quarter better than I felt this morning.
OK. Shall I just make you some toast for dinner tonight?
No, I think I should have spaghetti bolognese.
You sure?
Yes, but perhaps just 80% as much as I would usually have.
As I ate, I tried to contrive the healing effects of the food on my body by rising higher in my chair and smiling more regularly as the meal progressed. Later, I reported a further 6% improvement in my condition and a consequent intention to attend school the next day, and then said goodnight. I slept a sound and proud sleep. Upon waking, however, I found the new day to possess an ominous and restive quality. For some reason, before I left the house that morning, I barely thinkingly took a book from the family bookcase, The Lion and the Unicorn by George Orwell. It was a book I'd never read and knew nothing of. It sat like a mascot by my cereal bowl.
You reading that book for school?
No, just for life.
She looked as proud as a millionaire. I walked uneasily to school, dogged all the way by this unfathomable anxiety. The anxiety was fathomed almost immediately upon my arrival at school, however, when, during morning registration, Bradley Dixon reported that...
Here, lads. Cranny's been taken to Pallister's office.
Oh, Christ. We're busted.
No, we aren't busted, Craig. I bet Cranny just forgot to do a sick note.
Oh, shit.
What?
I forgot to do a sick note as well.
Bradley Dixon, could you go to Mrs. Pallister's office, please?
Ralph, Craig and I sat pensively during registration, not daring to look at each other, lest we should reveal our collusion. I suppose we remained confident in our superiority of intellects and therefore our fake sick notes. In fact, my fake sick note wasn't even fake, for I was the most intellectually superior of all. They got Craig during maths, and they got Ralph during French. As for me, I had off-site PE that Thursday afternoon. If I could just get from school to the climbing wall, and then home, and then through the next day, then it was the weekend. And then I'd just need to get through the rest of term and sixth form, and then I'd be safe. I boarded the minibus, all well in hand. I had done it. I was safe. I was the one who'd got away. Steve McQueen, Harry Hood...
Liam Williams, can you get off the minibus, please? Mr. Draper wants to see you.
Oh, no.
Draper, by the way, was deputy head of year. A grittier, more down and dirty role than head of year proper, i.e. Mrs. Pallister. Draper stalked playgrounds, coffee mug in hand, hustled in corridors, stood sentinel at bus stops while his superior, Mrs. Pallister, remained ensconced within her office, psychologically savaging those whom Draper delivered unto her, like some kind of insect feasting upon another insect's harvest. They were both wankers, in short. Draper, outside whose office I now sat, was a short man. As a small person myself, I'm allowed to insult people based on their stature. And bulky. And he sort of made a lot of his bulkiness, moving in an abrupt, thrusting way, kind of throwing himself at you. The quiet corridor was the most institutional-seeming corridor in the school. Long, unvarying, windowless. Well, I'm just going to say it. Kafka-esque. I wait there for perhaps half an hour. I looked at the book placed atop my thighs. The lion and the unicorn gave me hope somehow. Then came Draper, throwing open with a tosser's vigour the swing doors at the corridor's end, his squatness emphasised by a baggy white shirt, like an actually quite muscular David Brent, the same little beard and air of delusion.
Come with me, Williams.
I followed him into his office as he chucked himself behind his desk. He inspected his papers, nudged his computer's mouse to kill the screensaver, that concertina in triangle. At this time, I remember very few teachers having computers in their offices, as they were expensive and limited in their utility. But Draper had, I assume, bought one with his own money, just so he could feel important, and probably only used it to look at pictures of himself doing martial arts and to print off aggressive jokes to then laminate and put on his wall, the most heinous of which was positioned aggressively directly above his sweaty meathead. It read, "Everybody brings joy to this room. Some when they enter, most when they leave." I stared at this and felt empty.
What you looking at, Williams?
Nothing, sir.
You can't be looking at nothing, Williams. Your eyes are open, unless you're blind.
He then smiled insanely for a couple of seconds, as if he couldn't actually believe how good the thing he just said was. The vibe here was part, yup, Kafka-esque bureau, part noirish interrogation room, and also part school office, because it was a school office.
Where were you yesterday, Williams?
At home, sir.
Why were you at home?
I was ill, sir.
What were wrong with you?
Fatigue.
Fatigue?
And ache. Aching.
Aching? How?
I don't know, sir. My mum knows. She put it in letter.
In the letter, she said she was concerned about how unusual your symptoms were.
Yeah, but I'm feeling a bit more usual now.
Who else was at your house yesterday?
No one, sir.
Were there four other boys with you?
No.
Were Mark Cranston, Ralph Fletcher, Bradley Dixon, Craig Cheng with you?
Yes.
Ah!
Draper's expression of mad-eyed jubilation at my confession gave way very quickly to one of apparent glumness, presumably at the realisation that his opportunity to bully a child had now expired. He brayed on for 5 minutes about how important discipline was to the school and how Mrs. Pallister would have to punish us severely. I think he also said something about the Royal Marines.
The burpees and 1,000 press-ups.
On some level, I suppose, I was determined not to leave the room without undermining his dominant status somehow. I was still holding the lion and the unicorn. and when Draper commanded me to get up, I raised the book up to chest height in a way that you would functionally never need to do when just standing up while holding a book at the same time.
What's that?
It's a book, sir.
What's it about?
He had me there. I was pretty sure it wasn't about a lion and a unicorn.
Politics.
His main book is 1984.
Yeah, I know, I've read it.
Me too.
An Animal Farm?
With the animals.
Yep.
Draper loses something of his hard man's self-possession as we walk. In a backwater corridor of the CDT department, hidden machines scream like torturees. We enter a classroom I've never been in before. Feels like a ghost classroom. As in either a classroom that died and now only partially exists, or perhaps a classroom where ghosts would learn. It's not a form room, so there's a total emptiness about it. No coats hanging on the wall, just some generic safety notices. Under the old roll-down blackboard, Mrs. Pallister sits at a desk like a big, important toad. Her hair is short, her eyes are manic, not scowling exactly, but frowning deeply. Positioned at exactly equidistant removes around the classroom, the other truants are desked, doing nothing. They stare at the walls, the floor, their own hands. So that was that. All rumbled. We never did find out how they clued into the fact that five close friends weren't actually all ill on the same day. Draper takes in the scene, almost sniffing it in the way you might sniff in a nice dinner before eating it.
Now you're all here, Mr. Bishop, the headmaster.
We all knew who Mr. Bishop was, but for the sake of the listener, it was important for her to clarify his position in the school hierarchy.
Wants to see you all at the end of the day. You'll also be given letters to take home, and I'll be ringing your parents to make sure they got them.
Still, I didn't know the specificities of my punishment. But any which involved both Mr. Bishop, the head teacher, and a letter home to parents could not be good. At least, I did now know the method of delivery.
In the meantime, you can all sit there in silence and think about what you've done.
Mrs. Pallister?
Yes?
Maybe instead of thinking about what we've done, we could write about what we've done.
Why?
It'll make us more contemplative.
Contemplative? Yes, very well. We can all write about what you've done.
The others looked at me like I was mad or stupid, but I wasn't. I was mad or clever.
Where shall I write it, miss?
Write it in the back of an exercise book, Cranston.
I ain't got me exercise books, miss.
Why not?
Forgot 'em.
Why did you forget 'em?
Cos me mum works nights, so...
So?
So I forgot 'em. She's a nurse.
Even by Granny's standards, this was bad stuff.
What day is it today, Cranston?
The 8th.
I think she was after the day of the week rather than the date. And anyway, it was the 21st.
You don't even know where you are, do you, Cranston?
School?
And I think I know why. Shall I tell you why I think it is? I know why.
This wasn't an ideal sentence for anyone to deal with.
I think you're hooked up on cannabis. I know what you were all up to yesterday, and I tell you, I won't have it. You think you can and drop out on drugs, but it won't be done, and it won't be had. It won't be had out there, you know.
She pointed at a vague angle towards the ceiling.
I'm warning you, I'm not doing it for my sake. I don't come into school every day at the crack, freezing cold, shivering in the car, going out of my mind with stress for my own benefit. And I'm not doing it for you either, because you have to. Do you think I go home at night and think about you? Care about whether you go down the sewer or not? No, but I do. And you have to too. It's a hard world out there, and the only way to make it easier is by working hard. Those who work, they do all right. The house, 40 hours a week. Shivering in the car. And those who drop out and lazy-loosey around and they... Well, I worry for you. I worry for you. Have I made myself clear?
Yes, miss.
Good. Here, have some paper.
Can I have some paper too, miss?
Why?
Well, I want to write a lot.
Fine.
As I begin to write, I lacrimate, semi-voluntarily, and let the tears fall wheresoever they may. I figured that the reputational cost of being seen weeping like a widower would nowhere near outweigh the page-dappling benefits. Later that afternoon, we were made to stand at the front of the assembly hall, our backs to the convocation. bishop orating away before us like a despot before a bunch of treasonists awaiting the firing squad. In my hand, I still held the lion and the unicorn, now sheathing Pallister's letter, as well as several sheets of slightly moist paper. While Bishop droned, admittedly pretty eloquently on, I felt cool. I'd never seen anybody made to stand at the front like this, and this intended public shaming was having the contrasting effect of making me feel like a hero, albeit one who sobs openly in front of his peers. But, as one of the most renowned figures in contemporary comprehensive education in the Leeds area reached with expert rhetorical flourish his climax, I nearly pissed my soul out in anticipation of what was to come.
And to conclude, the child who works hard will end up the king. The child that does not will go to prison. Now, you boys, come with me.
We followed the esteemed pedagogue through a small door at the back of the hall into his office. I was auto-defecating, not because I feared Bishop's wrath, but because I knew that when it had expired, there'd be greater wrath to suffer. Defeating the penultimate boss always spells trepidation, never gladness.
Stand up straight, all of you. You're not in a slouching factory. What do you think I'm going to say to you, Dixon?
Very bad. Very bad boys.
Each morning in the jungle, the gazelle wakes up and knows he will have to outrun the fastest lion. And each morning, the lion wakes up and knows he will have to outrun the slowest gazelle. In July, when GCSEs are done and you're no longer on my plate, you're no longer part of my breakfast, as it were, you will wake up and you'll be running.
He fixed his gaze on me.
What's that in your hand?
A book, sir.
A boy with a book is my favourite of sights. Ah, George Orwell. Good old George. What is man but a pig with a wife?
He took the book from my hands, and noticing the now dry but still mottled sheets within, removed them, and having read them over quickly, he replaced them and handed back the book, saying nothing.
Your punishment is twofold. The first fold, you'll all be on report until the end of term.
On report was the semantically inelegant but nonetheless official term for the status of a student who has been given a report card to be filled in by the teacher each lesson. This was fine. Report was cool. Bishop was a skilled disciplinarian, though, and his next punishment was cannier, owing to its being inappropriable as a naughtiness trophy.
The second fold, you've all been given letters to take home. Soon you will be leaving us, and I suppose, therefore, we have failed to fully cure you of the kind of faults that have driven you to my office. It's a shame, because in the real world these faults will drive you not to my office, but into the gutter, and from the gutter into the drain, and into the sewers, and into the river, and then into the sea, where you will drown and die and have your bones picked by crabs. I can't save you now. Who are the only people who can save you now?
Ourselves?
Yeah, hadn't thought of that. A good point. I was going to say your parents. You've been given a letter to your parents. It tells them what you've done and what will become of you if you're not cured. It tells them that they are the only ones who can save you now, though, as William says, you can save yourselves, but it's too late to change it now. It tells them that it is their duty to punish you, to show you what the real world does to those who disobey. It is not our duty to punish you in a way we see fit. It is their duty to punish you in a way we see fit. You may all go, except you, Williams.
The others shuffle out dumbly.
I read what you've written in that letter, Williams. You're clearly very good with words, aren't you? Just let me warn you of this. You can't write your way out of trouble forever. You have to face reality. You can't just change reality by rewriting it.
Yeah. And with that, he transformed into a big fat turkey and farted himself upwards through the ceiling. I walked away from school that day with a heart that hardly dared beat. All that fear of what the teachers would do to me had been deferred and new cruel impetus given to the most powerful tyrants of all. When I got in, I placed the school's letter next to the Orwell on the table and my handwritten sheets on the doormat where they'd be seen by anybody who entered the house. And anybody with a functioning chordate nucleus would pick up the sheets, and this is before they've even seen the letter, of course, and this is what they'd read.
Dear Mum and Dad, it is a far, far better thing that I do now than I have ever done before. As you will soon learn by official epistle, yesterday, I have committed a group of friends and I did not go to school, and instead we assembled in our house, your house, within which you have devotedly raised me and tried to make me become a good person. We took the day off to do schoolwork and revision. The school environment is not conducive to the important. I find the atmosphere stifling and the teachers dull. I learn more from my friends than the teachers. We did play a computer game for half an hour. I will personally pay for any food. I fully understand that my punishment must be severe. I simply wish to express my deep shame. Sincerely and faithfully, your loving son, Liam Mark Williams.
I was beginning to fear I'd cried myself dry when I finally heard the key in the door downstairs. The usual bubbling of Thursday evening's semi-relief was short-lived.
What's this on the floor?
Like an eon went by. Eventually, I went downstairs. Mum was making dinner.
Hello.
Hi, love.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Pizza for dinner.
What's my punishment going to be?
You're going to be on report.
That's it?
That's it.
What does Dad say?
Alan?
Yes?
What do you think?
About what?
About the letter from school.
Well, I thought the ketchup was running low.
Oh, you left your book on the table.
Oh, thanks.
I'll get it. Hello? Hello, Mrs. Pallister. Well, that's our business, thank you. Enjoy your weekend.
Nothing more was ever said on the matter. Later that evening, I returned the lion and the unicorn to the shelf without having read a single word.
Liam Williams, Ladhood. Truants, starred Liam Williams, Alfie Field, Sam Shaw, Matthew Hudson, George Richardson, Ken Cheng, Amelia Laudell, Keelan McCarthy, Ewan Bailey, Gerard McDermott, Evie Killett, and Deborah Baker. It was written by Liam Williams. The script editor was Darren Johnson. The producer was Arnab Chanda. It was a BBC Radio comedy production.